This is the sixth day of this November 2007 seven-day sesshin. And today we'll take up a koan. This is in the collection of koans called the Shoyo Roku in Japanese, the Book of Serenity, sometimes called the Book of Equanimity. It's number 70. And it's called Jinshan Asks About Being. Master Jinshan asked Master Shushan, "You know clearly that life is non-life. Why are you still attached to life?" Shushan said, "The bamboo shoot necessarily becomes a bamboo. I am still a bamboo shoot. You cannot make a bamboo rope out of me." Jinshan said, "Later you will realize it yourself." And Shushan said, "My view is just as I said. What is your view?" Jinshan said, "This is the hall, that is the kitchen." And then Shushan bowed. It's not as inscrutable as it may sound. We'll bring some things to light here. We don't have much material on either of these guys. The first one, Jinshan, lived in the 900s, the end of the 800s and the 900s. He first met his teacher when he was traveling with his friends, Fayan and Shushan, that's the other guy in today's koan, when they sought shelter from a snowstorm at a certain temple. I read this in June, but since it involves both of these guys, I'll read it again. Jinshan served as head monk at Dizang Monastery. One day, Dizang entered the hall. Two monks came forward and bowed. Dizang said, "Both wrong." The two monks were speechless. After leaving the hall, they asked Shushan about this matter. Shushan said, "You yourself are grand and majestic. Isn't it a mistake to bow and inquire of others?" When Jinshan heard this, he did not agree with it. Shushan then asked him, "What do you think?" Jinshan said, "If you are in the midst of darkness, how can you help others?" Shushan angrily went to the abbot's room. That's the tip-off there. Went to the abbot's room and sought the opinion of Dizang. Dizang pointed down the pathway and said, "The cook should go into the kitchen." At these words, Shushan realized his error. And then that's all we have on Jinshan. And now this Shushan, he died the same year as Jinshan. They were brother monks. Here's just one passage, one teaching of Shushan. He entered the hall and addressed the monks, saying, "Ordinary people possess it completely, but they don't know it. Sages possess it completely, but don't understand it. If the sage understands it, then he or she is an ordinary person. If ordinary people understand it, then they are sages." This is actually a verse in the Mumonkan that Mumon uses. "In these forms of speech, there is one principle and two meanings. If a person can distinguish this principle, then he will have no hindrance to finding an entrance to the essential doctrine. If he can't distinguish it, then he can't say he has no doubt. Take care." Let's just go through this again. Ordinary people possess it completely. Completely. But they don't know it. The sage possesses it completely, but doesn't understand. Sages possess it completely, but don't understand it. If the sage understands it, then he or she is an ordinary person. If ordinary people understand it, then they are sages. So it's different kinds of knowing that they're dealing with here, that Shushan is outlining. Knowing and not knowing. So that's it for the little biographical material we have. Now let's go back to the koan. Jinshan asks about being. So Master Jinshan asked Master Shushan, "You know clearly that life is non-life. Why are you still attached to life?" There's another translation of this that we find in that. Andy Ferguson's Zen's Chinese Heritage, where it goes this way: "Clearly understanding that the nature of life is unborn, why is there a stream of birth and death?" But the one in our version in the workbook puts it more personal. "You know clearly that life is non-life. Why are you still attached to life?" Now, one may wonder why. Since these are both labeled here as masters, why would the first one be saying to the second master, why are you still attached to life? Well, I don't know that I can answer that, but except to point out that there are different degrees of enlightenment. But the first master here may just be testing the second master. Just throwing out something to see how he reacts, whether he gets miffed or what. Why are you still attached to life? Until we sever the root of life and death, what in Zen is called the root of life and death, there is some attachment, some residue, some remaining clinging to really the idea of life and death. That's the attachment, is always in the idea of it. So let's say that the first master senses that his old Dharma brother still hasn't had that final breakthrough. And he asks him this question. And then Shushan says in reply, "The bamboo shoot necessarily becomes a bamboo. I am still a bamboo shoot. You cannot make a bamboo rope out of me." First, to look at that, I'm turning to a commentary on this koan. This is from a translation by Thomas Cleary. This commentary is by an old master by the name of Wan Song. He says, he just mentions here that bamboo rope is made from the covering of bamboo. Bamboo shoots are tender and have no strength. Green bamboo has strength, while the bamboo shoot's strength is not yet mature and it cannot be used for rope. So you can see that Shushan here is not taking issue with Jinshan's implying or saying to him that he's still attached to life. And he takes this position. "I'm not ready yet. I'm still a bamboo shoot. You can't make a bamboo rope out of me." And then Jinshan simply says, "Later you will realize it yourself." This is always the case with everyone. Later may not be in this lifetime, but sooner or later, one will realize it if one persists. Jinshan, no doubt, could see that Shushan would persist, and in fact, his statement here was confirmed when Shushan became deeply enlightened himself. "Later you will realize it yourself." And then Shushan said, "My view is just as I said. What is your view?" Well, what about that statement? "My view is just as I said. What is your view?" It is the nature of koans that we aren't given much material to go on. It's sort of a skeletal outline of the exchange between these masters, or a master and a monk. It's something like a coloring book, a new coloring book that hasn't been colored in yet. There's just the outline. And it's the job of the student to get a sense of the way in which it's said and what's behind it and what is really being said. Because the words are the smallest part of whatever is being said. This is one of the great values of working with koans, is they train you to see through the words, to the mind state behind the words. This is superb training for getting along in life, in relationships with others, because what the words people use are just the bare outline of what they're really saying. Everything depends on how it is being said and the understanding or lack of understanding behind it, where the person stands, where the person is in his or her practice when they say it. "My view is just as I said." What is your view? And Jinchan says, this is the hall, that is the kitchen. In the Cleary translation, it goes, this is the superintendent's quarters, that is the cook's quarters. This Shushan does seem to have some wisdom. He recognizes there in his statement about the bamboo shoot and the bamboo rope that there's a season for everything, and that in practice there is a ripening that has to occur. Except in the rarest cases, in the very rarest cases, such as with the Wei Nung, the sixth patriarch, who was a young man, he's about 20 years old, he's carrying firewood to a customer, he's illiterate, and he overheard a monk chanting the Diamond Sutra, reciting the Diamond Sutra. And he heard the phrase, arouse the mind without its abiding anywhere. He'd never sat before, never practiced, but at that moment he had some initial opening, kensho, and later a much deeper realization. But that is the reason that story is so well known, is because it's almost unheard of that one can just pop through an initial breakthrough without any practice or training beforehand. How would you feel if you're a teacher and you said to a student, why are you still attached to life? And the student said, well, I'm just not ripe enough. My practice isn't ripe enough yet. It must be that I am not ready yet. As if the teacher didn't know that in the first place. A later master, in commenting on this response, said, pity that my mind is clear, but my power is insufficient. Time after time, seeds produce manifest patterns. Like a man gone crazy from wine, no sooner sworn off drink than finding some fine liquor. Shushan, with this bamboo remark, seems to know something. Could even call him a sage of a certain kind. It does say he's a master. And then I go back to that passage we read a little while ago, where Shushan himself said, if the sage understands it, then he or she is an ordinary person. That's Shushan's problem here, is that he knows where he stands. Got a kind of a, um, he's got a position on himself, which is a concept. Okay, I'm such and such a point in my practice. I've seen somewhat into this matter, but I'm not yet beyond that. I'm still not fully ripe. I know where I am. There's a Japanese saying, a little wisdom prevents enlightenment. And Jinshan, later, you will realize it yourself. He might have said, later, when you no longer know where you stand, when you don't know so much about yourself and your position on this spiritual ladder that you seem to have in your mind, then you will realize it. And then Shushan's second response, my view is just as I said. What is your view? Can you sense the mind state behind that? There's so many different kinds of mental obstructions to awakening. Maybe at base, they all involve lack of faith, insufficient faith in oneself. That's what I think it was Basui said. What ails you? No, that's Rinzai. He said, what ails you? Lack of faith in yourself is what ails you. But that lack of faith is based on different mental attachments, different stances that one may take. One may be just simply, I don't have what it takes. I have too much. My karma is too heavy. This same thing. It's knowing too much about oneself. It's a concept. It's a picture. Oh, look at me. Look at my life. Look at my difficulties and my relationships and my work. My trouble with my tendency toward addictions. My bad habits, I must have karma. My karma is just too heavy. I'll sit a lot this life. It makes me feel better. I feel clearer, sharper, stronger. I'm afraid it's not for me this time around. That's one delusion. It's a delusion. Because you can't ever say that about yourself. Why? Because fundamentally we are all endowed with this enlightened nature. Like water and ice, without water, no ice, outside us, no Buddhas. It's like ice saying, well, I can't become water in this lifetime. You can't even, you can't become water. You are water, just in a frozen state. But you're H2O, there. How can you not become it when you are it in your essence? There is no one, maybe, possibly, with the exception of someone in a psychiatric hospital where severely deranged, but certainly there's no one who practices at a sesshin who can't do this. This sesshin. It's not out of the reach of anyone because this is our nature. Our nature is enlightenment. There is only this enlightened nature. There's nothing else. Don't think, oh, enlightened nature and ego nature, big self, small self, big mind, small mind. This is wrong. This is wrong. There is only enlightenment. Another trap that some students fall into is fear of failure. Maybe this is something that more senior students are susceptible to more than more junior students. But the thinking goes like this. If I try my hardest and fail again, then what? What have I got then? At least if I don't try my hardest, then I've got an excuse for failing. It's one of these wily stories that the ego can come up with. And so one holds back. It's probably not conscious. One's not consciously holding back. But unconsciously, with this fear of failure, one thinks, okay, then I don't want to take the risk of an all-out effort. Because what if? What if after all that effort, nothing comes of it? Well, you know the answer to that. You go on and you keep working. Kierkegaard, the Danish philosopher, said, "To dare is to lose your footing for a moment. Not to dare is to lose your whole life." That too comes from a lack of faith in oneself, faith in the practice, faith in the teacher. And the teacher says repeatedly, you have everything you need. You just have to be willing to throw it all into your practice completely. Why can't you believe that? Teacher is not saying this because it's part of his job description, you know. Oh, you have to keep him propped up. you got to keep him working. Tell him anything, but just keep him working, you know, because it'll be good for them. You can, get some more jariki and refine your personality and your character. So sure, who can prove otherwise? Tell them they can. No. It's because it's the truth. It's the truth. And then there's this stance of, well, that's just me. That's just where I am. It can be somewhat like, well, you know, I know, I believe, I have faith that I have this enlightened nature, but this is where I am. Sue me. This is what I can see at this point in time. This is how far my eyes are open. My view is just as I said. What is your view? Just back to that that notion that the teacher is saying this just to encourage people to keep working. It may be something that is more widely believed in this time of political correctness, where it's become kind of the norm that you have to fall all over yourself to make everyone feel equal. But it's just, it's not the reason the teachers say what they say. It's because they have seen, realized for themselves that this is the case. And have seen what an ancient master once said, that ordinary people are just those who are enlightened the whole day long but don't know it. One has to reach the point where one can't put up with it anymore. You can't stand not knowing what this is, who I am. You can't stand it anymore, not knowing who is. You can't stand it. That kind of desperation. Then out of that comes the commitment. Whatever it takes, whatever it takes. What is it? What is it? And then the fear of failure, if that is the obstruction, that just evaporates. Aeneas Nin put it this way, and then the time came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk to blossom. Back to this statement, I read a verse by a master who was commenting on Shushan's statement about the bamboo, where he says, "Pity that my mind is clear, but my power is insufficient." Have it all figured out, got the idea right, that like water and ice, without water no ice, outside us no Buddhas. In the very beginning, all beings are Buddha. This very body, the body of Buddha, it's all clear. But there is the unwillingness to turn everything toward the practice. Unwillingness. Pity that my mind is clear, but my power is insufficient. Time after time, seeds produce manifest patterns. Seeds. Every time we choose a thought over the practice, we're laying seeds. Every time we pursue thoughts, every time we indulge in a fantasy, something that comes to mind, go off track, we're making that habit force stronger, the habit of scattering the mind. This is karma. We are working our karma breath by breath in our sitting. Breath by breath. We are strengthening our habit of dividing the mind, scattering the mind, or the opposite. We're weakening that habit. We're strengthening our capacity to hold the mind steady on one thing and to see beyond mind. It's a choice between mind or no mind. Mind would be all the ordinary trafficking in thoughts and things. No mind is the absence of all that. No mind is mu. Like a man gone crazy from wine, no sooner sworn off drink than finding some fine liquor. Again and again, we say, okay, all right. Just mu. What is this? What am I? Just that question. Stay with it. And then some snowflake of a thought comes flitting through and we're after it. Some storyline that we love to weave in the mind. That's the fine drink. Fine liquor that we keep going to. This is the fundamental addiction, our addiction to our thoughts, the addiction out of which all other addictions arise. But as strong as this addiction is, there is a stronger force, and that is the force of no mind, the force of mu. My view is just as I said. What is your view? And then Jinshan, this is the hall, that is the kitchen. This is the superintendent's quarters, that is the cook's quarters. There's a verse on this line. From this Wan song, this is the hall, that is the kitchen. He said, empty and at ease without dependence, lofty and serene, untrammeled. Home and country peaceful, those who arrive are rare. A little bit of power divides ranks and grades. The fluid, clear mind and body is going beyond right and wrong. Is beyond right and wrong. Right and wrong ended. Standing alone on earth, there is no beaten track. A little bit of power divides ranks and grades. This is why, this is the value of ongoing sitting and sesshins is that we are developing greater power, greater mind discipline, greater will. This is the sort of the this mind power, the samadhi power that the Japanese call joriki, is that there is this accumulation of this power that enables us, as we go on, in as the years pass, as the sesshins pass, we are little by little better able to leave those thoughts, to return to the practice, to resist the addiction of those thoughts. And then at that, Jinshan says, this is the hall, that is the kitchen. Shushan bows. What did Jinshan mean? This is one of the points of this koan that the student has to bring to life in the Doksan room. We have about 25 more hours in this sesshin. And in these 25 hours, there is great possibility, with these 6 days behind our back, the wind behind our back, we've got a lot of momentum. And what we weren't able to do earlier in sesshin, we can still do in this last day. Because, as Roshi Kaplow said so many times, and I have quoted him so many times, it's not that 6 days have gone by, but that these 6 days are all telescoped into this last day. As long as we are not falling prey to our habit of dwelling in the I, the me, and the my, anything is possible. What is to lose? Well, okay, it can be difficult, demanding, painful even, to make an all-out effort. But if we don't make that kind of effort, we can't win. And if we do make that kind of effort, we can't lose. What can you possibly lose by throwing body and mind 100% into the practice in this last day? And imagine the freedom that can come from this. Time is up now. We'll stop and recite the four vows.